Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
It never rains, but it pours. On today's Under the Abbey Stand, we look back at another grey afternoon at the Abbey and ask, when will this form end? Can it get any worse? And when will we next score a goal? Hello, everyone. I'm John Warland and welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'll be hosting this week's episode. Thanks for joining us. I know it's not easy to listen in after another home defeat and another 90 minutes without a goal, but we'll try and keep it as jovial as we can. I was hoping my weekend wouldn't peak on Friday with the release of the new Taylor Swift album, but then Saturday happened. Helping me get over that is a panel of Cambridge hardcores, making a return to the pod after a few weeks off. Good evening, Owen.
Evening, John. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you, mate. Good to see you again. You're bang into the music, so I'm sure you enjoyed that little intro there. I'm sure that was something you've been listening to on Friday.
The Taylor Swift album, that's for sure. That's,
also joining the panel, fresh from a return from Norwich, the commitment to recording these podcasts every Sunday evening can never be doubted. It's our good pal, Mr. Tom Walker. Good evening.
Evening. Yeah, I was checking out Wes Houlihan headquarters over the weekend.
Scouting for a Wes replacement, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Scouting for anything at the moment, to be honest with you. After a pretty bleak afternoon at the at what was once known as the Fortress, which has become something of a bombed out shell in the last few weeks.
We've got two away games to look forward to. So
yeah,
that'll be fine.
They're both obviously the sort of games you would like coming up, having lost five on the spin as well. Grounds that we've literally never won at, and them basically. It's not ideal, fair to say.
Before we look ahead to the upcoming fixtures, we of course got to look back at what's gone on at the club over the last 7 days. We'll touch on the performance from Saturday in a moment, but before we get to the game, there was a couple of bits that came out before the game that I think we need to touch on. The first one, the rather sad news that Adam May is going to be out for pretty much the whole season. It's being reported with an ACL injury. The injury news doesn't get much better, does it? Dimi Mitov tweeted a picture of him with his foot in a boot, saying he'll be out for a few weeks, but others are speculating it will be longer than that. Tom, not good news on the injury front, huh?
No. As you mentioned last week, that we've been pretty unfortunate with the amount and the sort of concentration in areas of the pitch, the injuries that we've had. And somehow it got worse throughout the week. We were talking last week about the fact that, we've got both our left backs injured. Obviously, Mitov, we kind of suspected during the game at Sheffield Wednesday, picked up a knock. Obviously, it was a kind of remained to be seen how serious that was. Obviously, as you mentioned, been confirmed that it's going to keep out for at least a few weeks. Hopefully he recovers quickly because he's obviously a good option to have. I think there's a question whether he deserved to retain his place in the team anyway. So I would suggest maybe that's not as big a miss to us as sort of Adam May. And really unfortunate for Adam May because, over the last sort of 18 months, he's really kind of established himself as a really key player in the team. And, central midfield has been an area that we've kind of focused on a little bit over the last few weeks. Who's coming in, who's coming out, and do we have enough cover there? So when the guy who you would expect to start, if everyone's fit, is confirmed to be out for the rest of the season, that's obviously a massive blow. And with results going the way they are, you do kind of feel like it's going to be a bit of a scrap get through to January and just trying to dress a couple coming in. And I think that'd be really welcome, just to freshen things up more than anything. But Yeah, it's a real shame, and you know, it looks like O'Neill maybe picked up a bit of an injury against Port Vale, which is again clearly far from ideal. That leaves us really at the bare bones in the centre of the park, and you know, that's an area that we have I think had plenty of conversations about. And you know, that's when everyone's fit, let alone when you're missing people. Yeah, obviously a shame all around, really. But I guess the focus is going to be what's going on the pitch, right? And clearly that's not too much brighter.
Good news that there isn't a game on Tuesday. Oh, no, wait, no, there is. We've had loads of questions in for this week's podcast. So thank you, as always, for sending them in. It's at AbbeyStandPod on Twitter. I'm going to ask this first question to you, Owen. That's a question that Dominic has sent in, because Tom's briefly mentioned on the strength in midfield at the moment. But Dominic's asked, are we now paying the price for not strengthening the midfield and the defence in the summer? And a follow-up question, is loyalty to certain players shown by Bonner during the last transfer window slightly misguided?
Let's take the first bit of that. I mean, in hindsight, we are paying the price. I don't think anyone can argue that. Did we expect to lose Adam May for the season? No, probably not. It's a really big loss, really, isn't it? And you know, obviously Digby picked up a knock in the last game as well. I don't think he's been particularly at 100% lately as well. So who does that leave us? Central midfield, it leaves us Lewis Simper, Ben Warman, both, you know, decent players, but at the end of the day, very, very inexperienced. I mean, you've got Liam O'Neill as well. Like you said, picked up a knock against Port Vale. You never know, Liam O'Neill. You know, if he's not going to keep him out for a week, are they going to keep him out for 6 months? It's, you know, he's, again, for all his strengths as a player, he is also very injury prone. So, yeah, you know, we are paying the price a little bit, but I can absolutely see Bonner's reasoning in not strengthening central midfield in the summer, thinking that, you know, we've got three kind of first choice central midfielders there for two positions and a couple of youth players to come in. But that's all well and good, bringing youth players in when things are going well, when the team's settled. It's a little bit different, a little bit more difficult even to throw them in when things aren't going quite so well. The defence, and I think this is where the question about showing loyalty to people is, and I think there's probably one person on everyone's lips here, isn't there?
I wasn't going to name names, but go on, you do it.
Yeah, Greg Taylor, friend of a pod, obviously, great club servant. It's become really quite painfully obvious that he suffered last year by missing out pretty much the entire season. He's not getting any younger. He's not getting any quicker. It's almost painful to see a little bit, isn't it? Just to see the mistakes he's making as an experienced, you know, the most experienced centre back. I mean, probably the most experienced player in the team, really. And to see him make the kind of mistakes that, you know, we know he's got in him. And I read the message board and I see people have called him out for making mistakes every week, and that's not the case. You know, I'm not going to dig him out totally, but you know, against Ipswich he was at fault, certainly. Obviously last season against Harrogate was Christ awful. You know, I said I'd never mention that again, but here we go. But he's, you know, he's not the only player to make mistakes. It's just he's the most experienced player in the team. He should be leading by example, and it must be hard. It must be hard for the likes of Rossi, who has only really made one mistake this season, a pretty big one. But you know, to see someone like Taylor have his place in the team ahead of him, and I understand why he's in the team, because he is experienced. He is club captain. It's very difficult to drop club captain, but Bonner, you know, he should be picking players on current form, not loyalty. Greg's obviously great in the dressing room. He wouldn't be club captain otherwise. He's obviously done amazing things at his club, you know, part of two promotions. But is it time we start to look at bedding in the younger players, bedding in Rossi, bedding in Okadina? Yeah, I think it is.
Tom, you and I have been doing these pods together for quite a while. I feel like I can read you and judge you when it comes to podcasting. And I just know that one of your favourite topics after discussing how to sort out the defence is the January transfer window. October the 23rd is the day that we're recording this podcast. I feel like this is probably a record in our sense of being the first time that we've mentioned January transfer window this early. Is it one that we should mention, or should we just move on, not think about January? It's a long way off.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, you can look at the current squad as it is, and it's quite evident that we're going to need a couple coming in. But yeah, I think we had a similar discussion. I can't remember if it was last season or perhaps probably not the one before, but certainly last season, when I think we were having similar issues in terms of making mistakes and sort of poor defensive record. And you know, I think the point we're making was that, you know, it is October. Like, I know November's pretty light in terms of league fixtures, but you're still playing probably between now and then, what, another 7 or 8 league games. You can think about January as much as you want, and I would like to think that, you know, in light of missing Adam May for the rest of the season, that's obviously confirmed. Hopefully there's some work going on in the background with a view to bringing people in January, but we can't get into a trap of just longing for it and, you know, kind of writing off the next few weeks, because you know, we kind of need a couple in. I would maybe slightly disagree that you know, with hindsight, we would have strengthened the squad differently. I think if it was like, if we'd been let down in terms of quality, particularly in the middle of the park, I think then, yeah, like there's a question to be asked. Like, did we make the right decisions in terms of, you know, keeping O'Neill, you know, giving him another contract? That was obviously, I think, one of the sort of more debated areas of our summer business. But at the moment, it's not really about how they're playing. It's about availability of players. And, you know, if we'd have shifted 2 or 3 out and brought 2 or 3 sort of established League One players in and they rupture their ACL, it doesn't really matter. It's about people getting injured and the availability of these guys. So, yeah, it's a frustrating one. I mean, January is going to be something that I'm sure we'll get questions about in the next few weeks. And, you know, obviously leading up to the transfer window. But, you know, Bonner's got to work with what he's got at the moment. And in terms of like the team selection, for example, against Port Vale, I guess we'll move on to that. I can kind of see why he went with the lineup that he did. Mm-hmm. You know, I think managers often do it, you know, at every level. When they're in a bit of a rut, when they're in a poor run of form, when they need a result, they kind of, you know, go back to the old guard, the tried and trusted. And, you know, for all that maybe at this level, there's certain flaws that are being exploited with people like Taylor, people like O'Neill. They are the guys that he'll rely on. They are the leaders in the dressing room, and they're the ones that he'll expect to take initiative. So yeah, as much as surprised to see like Lewis Simpro, for you know, for example, dropping out of the team, having had about as good a week as you could realistically ask of anyone. You know, and I know the Pizza Cup games, you know, aren't ones that we go into massive detail about, but he gets the goal, he gets man of the match, having only played half an hour. Obviously, he was man of the match against Sheffield Wednesday. In as much as I think he would be or would have been a better option in the middle than, you know, perhaps someone like O'Neill, I can really understand why Bonner did what he did. But yeah, I think you mentioned right at the start, George, you know, when it rains, it pours with these things. And I know it's kind of a cliche, but you know, when you are down there, when you are looking for a result, it's funny how things go against you and things just, and you do get sort of things just not quite happening for you, not quite dropping for you. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty that we can criticise. There's plenty of things that could and should be done better. And there's certainly areas that I guess we'll talk about over the next half an hour or so that we're not happy with. And I'm sure that's kind of reflected in the wider fan base. But at the moment, it does feel like it's kind of Cambridge United versus the world, I think.
I was desperate to see us play 2 number 10s, and I still maintain that having both Lancaster and Nibs on the pitch behind the striker has got merit in it, and we'll touch on the formation in due course. But yeah, I really thought, yes, on Saturday it felt like such an odd one to not have a bit more of a ball player in that sort of back seven, as it were. Anyway, we'll come on to that in a bit, because you know there's loads we need to talk about around our goal drought. But Tom, you mentioned quite rightly about last year going through similar run of results, similar sort of form. And you and I were speaking pre-game before the Port Vale game about comparisons to the Wimbledon home game last season. For those listening that can't quite remember what that was, it was a 1-0 win courtesy of a Jensen Weir header. And it was the first win off the back of, I think, 8 without a win. And so we went into the game against Port Vale, and it feels like there was a lot of similarities to be drawn between the two games before kickoff even happened. And I think for me, that's what is the most disappointing, is the fact that we've ended the game against Port Vale with no points and another defeat on the board. And I just wonder, Tom, do you think that the team of last season, even though it is pretty much the same players, do you think the team of last season would have beaten Port Vale in the game this season?
It's an interesting discussion. And obviously, to an extent, it's all kind of ifs and buts. But I know that there will be people that look back on that team, and to an extent, like, it's not about the quality that was there that maybe we're missing now. Guys like Houlihan, guys like Iredale, for example. You know, might as well just kind of say it's something that I was kind of, you know, we have to talk about on the pod. You know, for certain players in the team, it's about the willingness to run, the willingness to work hard and give everything they've got for the shirt. I think I've been pretty level-headed on this pod over the last couple of weeks in terms of, you know, having perspective when we lose against the bigger clubs in the league with, you know, more resources, and I can accept us losing in pretty much any manner, but certain individuals in the squad yesterday weren't pulling their weight. You know, anyone that watched the game will probably know the one or the ones that I'm referring to. And I think the thing about this squad over the last 3 years, you know, go back to the promotion season, maybe not so much the promotion season, because relative to the level, that squad was obviously well above, you know, sort of average, basically. But the thing about Cambridge United in 2022, playing in League One, it doesn't work if not everyone's really going for it and not everyone's pulling in the same direction. It kind of all falls apart if you've got one link in the chain that isn't doing what they need to do and not running hard enough and not looking like they're, you know, fully bought into it. Then it lets everyone else down, and, you know, it's Sam Smith basically. And I hate to dig people out because he was obviously immense for us last season, particularly in the second half of the season. But I hope it's not something that's repeated in terms of his performance, because to me, didn't really look like I wanted to be there. Didn't really look like he, you know, he didn't really look like the same player that was attracting interest from all over the place during the summer. And that's the sort of thing that leads to question marks about, you know, are their heads in it? Are they sort of, you know, are they gutted that things maybe didn't materialise in the summer that they hoped or sort of expected might? So if you're asking about, do I think the squad of last season might beat Port Vale? I think, yeah, because you kind of felt at that time that there was just a real sort of identity about everything that we did. And we've talked about, like, the word identity quite a lot over the last few weeks in terms of how we play, how we set up, but a lot of it's just character and attitude. And I'm not saying that that's missing from this squad, like, certainly not for the most part. And I'd hate for it to come across that I'm digging out the kind of, you know, character or attitude of the team, because I think for the most part, you know, it is there. But yeah, I think there's certainly a lack of, feels like there's a bit of a lack of togetherness around the club at the moment in some respects. And, you know, again, that's something that's kind of been a real kind of feature of everything that's been good in the last few years. And, you know, you know, whether you talk about, like, divisions in the fan base, different opinions, different things being shouted on the terraces, boos at halftime. It's just not quite what it was. And I can't quite put my finger on why it is, you know, because these players don't just go from being the players who we're talking about, can they push for the playoffs, literally like 3 or 4 weeks ago, to being guys who have lost 5 on the bounce just overnight. That doesn't just happen. Just feels like it's been a bit of a perfect storm where there's been a bit of uncertainty around the club. And, you know, with obviously the manager, a few players who just aren't performing to the right level, one or two maybe who could give a bit more and could show a bit more. And yeah, when you take a few elements of this and a few elements of that and you put them together, you do lose games you expect to get points from, and let's not pretend that Port Vale are a team that we go into these games thinking we'll take a point. Like, this is a game that we should be targeting for all three. you know, if there are any Vale fans listening, I'm sure they'll understand the sentiment of what I'm saying, and you know they'll obviously look at us for the same, and obviously fair play to them, they come and got the win. But yeah, it's a bit it's pretty roundabout and kind of long winded way, I guess, of answering the question. But it just feels like there's a bit of a click missing.
Yeah, definitely.
This time last year.
No, definitely. And I mean, if there are any Port Vale fans listening, I feel like their season so far is going a bit how ours was last year. They're picking up wins where perhaps they shouldn't be picking up wins, and they're doing it because of sort of spirit and determination, you know, back to back away wins, you know, coming to us and winning, and obviously the big win at Derby before. There are certain things, aren't there, in football that you just can't account for. So things like luck not going your way, you know, scoring a rather ridiculous own goal yesterday and, you know, deflected crosses away at Ipswich, breaking down your game plan. So, you know, and other things as well that, you can't predict or factor in, like, you know, the injury crisis seemingly getting worse game on game, you know, Taylor and O'Neill both looking like they went off injured against Port Vale. But there are some things that you can sort of factor and you can sort of picture. And I feel what you were talking about, Tom, just there is exactly that little old Cambridge last season were little old Cambridge because of the spirit and because of the fight. And it doesn't, I don't know, I'm not doubting that they're not fighters out on the pitch at the moment, but it does seem like there's something a little bit dampened about what's going on. Yeah, it doesn't get any easier with two hard games coming up. Owen, Bonner said post-game that we need to sharpen up. Do you think he was referring to, you know, that point that Tom and I were just making about how, you know, how we're performing as a team, or do you think he's talking specifically about how we are going forward, or what's your take on sort of that comment from him, and any thoughts on how we could do this magical sharpening up and start returning some points?
Yeah, he sounded pretty upset, didn't he, post game, like more so than normal. Like he's normally a pretty good listener. He normally puts quite a positive spin on things. Like you say, you know, the likes of Derby, the likes of Ipswich, like you never expected to beat those, and if you do, it's great. If you don't, yeah, you don't. But the likes of Port Vale, the likes of Bristol Rovers, we should have been competing with those sides. You know, they're in our league, essentially. I think Bonner said it before, that, you know, League One is a league of two leagues with your Derbies, your Ipswich, your Sheffield Wednesdays, et cetera, your big teams up the top there. And then you kind of second group, and we're, as you know, size wise, we're certainly towards the bottom of our second group. But when he talks about sharpening up, I mean, yeah, he means in front of goal. We've been toothless, haven't we, lately? Like, you know, did we have a shot on goal yesterday? No. Or shot on target yesterday? No. Nope. I don't know if we even had a particularly serious shot on goal. We didn't really have many chances against Ipswich. In the midweek game, let's ignore the Pizza Trophy. It used to be when the ball came forward, you'd think, yeah, we'll do something with it. And it just seems this year that it seems, for one, like everyone's forgot how to cross, or people have worked us out, or none of our crosses reach where they're meant to reach. They either reach the first man and get cleared, they go sailing over everyone and out into touch, or they go into a really congested kind of area where everyone's just jumping for it. And you know, you say Smith's been pretty ineffective this year. It doesn't really look like his heart's in it. I'm not disagreeing with that, but do we think part of the problem is people have worked out Joe Ironside as well, because he's barely had a sniff in the last few games. I know he didn't play the full 90 yesterday, but he doesn't look, you know, he looks like a shadow of a player he is. I know he takes an absolute beating for the team. I'm not doubting his commitment, but it just feels like people have just worked him out a little bit. And it's like, you know what? Refs don't give him much protection. Let's just keep on top of him. And maybe he's lost that sharpness a little bit, where before he'd get the turn, get the shot in, or you know, try and hold the ball up and make something of it. Now he's just being thrown off the ball, or he's losing it. And yeah, I don't know. It's I wonder also if the kind of the, you know, for the attacking three, and then the lone, you know, having Joe as a lone striker, does that work? he worked, you know, he had a great season with Mullin alongside him. Is it time to put someone, be it Smith, be it Okunbiri, be it Nibs, be it anyone else, up, you know, up top with him? I don't know. We got to try something, and we can't just keep on like this. It's we're just not having any shots, are we? And you can kind of understand a team like Derby having a really strong, experienced, expensive defence. Same with Ipswich, but you know, Port Vale didn't look that good, did they? Like, you know, they won, they played all right, but you know, they didn't look like a team that's going to be up there or challenging for the playoffs at the end of the season. You've got to be testing the keeper. You know, their keeper went off after 20 minutes. You've got to be second string goalie. I know he wore the number one shirt. He's obviously an experienced keeper, but you just got to be testing him. You've got to make him work for it a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dig into this. Let's dig further into this goal drought, right? It's by the next time we play at home, it would have been over 2 months since we scored at the Abbey, not including the Pizza Trophy, of course, or collected a single point at home. Our only goal in the last five games, league games, of course, not the Pizza Trophy, Tom, has come from the penalty spot. So some stats there that sort of sum up how bleak it is at the moment. Let's dig into what Owen was saying there, Tom, about, you know, playing one up top or playing Ironside or playing someone with Ironside. We've had loads of questions come in. C United 84 and Huffy, to name a few, sort of asking around the attacking situation we've got. And everyone seems to be sort of saying the same question, you know, why are we so one-dimensional in attack and what is going wrong? What would you like to see sort of change to sort of mix it up a little bit? Because it does feel like, we've tried a bit of everything, right? We've tried two up top. We tried two behind a striker. We tried obviously the three behind a striker like we did last season. Seems like there's something bigger than just the formation that is causing our issues in front of the goal. And I wonder if it is the, you know, the personnel, the form of certain players, you know, Smith, you've already mentioned, and Ironside's not had the best season so far. But is it, you know, is it a case of, I don't know, people not hitting the heights of last season or being asked to do a different job compared to last season? How would you like to sort of see us move it forward as a striking unit, Tom?
Well, it was strange against Vale because, I mean, we tried two pretty different systems in the game. Obviously, starting, you know, with Lancaster and Nibs just off Smith, and then we changed it pretty early in the second half, just after half time, to like an almost like 4-2-4, which left us really open, but just didn't improve the way that we were attacking and didn't lead to any real chance creation. We maybe had, I guess you could argue, a little more control on the game. You could argue that. I'm not saying it was definitely the case, of course. I guess the concern is that at various times we had James Brophy, Jack Lancaster, Harvey Nibs, Sam Smith, Fajiri Okunbiri, Joe Ironside, Shiloh Tracy on the pitch at sort of various moments in the game. And we looked pretty hopeless going forward. And one of the main sort of, I think, positives that we had coming off the summer transfer window was that we felt there was some real depth there. We felt there was a real, you know, a really good amount of options that we could pick from and hopefully have a few different sort of strategies and ways of attacking teams. But, you know, without maybe being too cynical, it did kind of feel like we were just lobbing forwards on just sort of hoping that something might click. You know, I'm sure, knowing what we know about Mark Bonner, that wasn't the case. I'm sure there's more thought process than that, but from the stands, that's kind of how it felt. I guess there's a couple of things I would like to see, and the first is I would like to see Fajiri starting centrally. Bonner said he's ready. Bonner said he's good to go now. I think that was after Sheffield Wednesday. I think he said he's in a position where he can start.
It really annoyed me against Port Vale when he got thrown on, but in like the number 10 role, and it, I don't know, Nibs out on the left, and then Lancaster out on the right, and Okunbiri behind the striker. It felt like all three of those were in the wrong position. So I'd love to see Okunbiri play further forward, either on his own or alongside Ironside.
Yeah, I think that'd be my first one. I think as well, he's like our biggest goal threat really at the moment. He's the one who is experienced and kind of proven, you know, to an extent at this level. I mean, Smith is just miles off the pace at the moment. He's scored in like, I think it's like two of like the last 19 games. I was chatting to Julian coming out of the ground and he had a good stat, which I unfortunately have forgotten. But yeah, it was to the effect of he scored like in two of the last 19 matches. Obviously, one of those is a hat-trick against Burton, which is, you know, brilliant and fair credit to him. But the point is that on the whole, he's been pretty short of what we would expect from him. And it feels like he's the one that needs some time out of the team at the moment. The subs yesterday were a bit frustrating in that it felt like the wrong people came off the pitch and the wrong ones stayed on for 90 minutes.
But at least he made his subs early, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one thing, isn't it? I mean, the timing's one thing, but if it's...
Every silver lining.
Yeah, I guess. And the other thing is, like, I think, you know, as much as, like, players are off form, and I get that kind of leads to a lack of confidence. I look at someone like Shiloh Tracy, for example, and I think, like, the way he played against Port Vale, like, I'm not sure how simply to put it. Like, his main asset is his ability to beat a player with pace and power and just get to the byline and get a ball in. And it's like, he seems so, like, reluctant to just, like, run in a straight line. And I think with some of these guys, it seems to be a bit of a reset. Like, this is what's got you here. Like, but with the greatest respect, if Shiloh Tracy was slow, he wouldn't be playing at this level. If he didn't have the ability to run past someone, he wouldn't be playing at this level. He'd be playing in a development squad or maybe a non-league or something like that. And I don't mean to, like, discredit the quality that he's got, but realistically, a lot his physical attributes are why he's so important for us. And, like, I just wonder if there needs to be just, like, a conversation, just, like, an honest conversation with the squad, just going, like, what's got you here? What are you good at? Do that, basically. And with some of them, maybe it just needs to be, like, a real kick up the arse. Just, like, look, you're like, not performing to the right level. And that's where you want leaders like Greg, like Liam O'Neill, like Harrison Dunk, for example, the senior guys in the squad, just, you know, have a word, basically. I get that a lot of this stuff is not tactical. Like, I don't think that there's... because, you know, we've tried so many things, I think we're probably maybe just a simple 4-4-2 is maybe like the one thing that we've not tried yet. Mm-hmm. And that could be an option. I know people love a 4-4-2. There's clamour for it every time. And obviously, you know, that does give you the option to, you know, try with different combinations up front. You know, you feel like Fajiri and Ironside would be a real handful for people, you know, for any team at this level. And, you know, as much as it's, you know, it allows you to play Fajiri, it does take a bit of the workload off Ironside as well. So maybe that kind of answers the question that Owen mentioned earlier. But yeah, like, it does feel like we've tried a lot of different things. We try to, you know, different players with different minutes. I guess the one that the fans want to hear is Janna. Because I know we have questions about him very regularly. Where is he? Why is he not playing? I have my suspicions why he's not playing. And that's because he's, you know, the minutes I've seen of him, you know, although he looks like a really good raw talent, he's maybe not quite mature enough to be playing regular league football at the moment. And that's why he's maybe missing out to guys who are a bit more experienced and who are a bit more, rounded. But yeah, like it does feel to me like there's enough quality there. There's enough, you know, sort of precedence there in terms of the players that we've got who have played well in similar sort of setups before. It's just not quite at the right level at the moment. And whether that's time out of the team, rocket up the backside, arm around the shoulder, whatever you want to do. I mean, something has to click, something has to give. Because, yeah, like I say, again, against Port Vale, it was pretty hopeless. Bristol Rovers, obviously, that's the game that we scored the goal, the penalty, which feels like a lifetime ago now. We did actually create some really good chances there. Yeah. But against Vale, like it was so far the other way. Like, yeah, no shots on target. The only real opening we had was Lancaster just for half time. You know, obviously should do better. But that aside, like, we were.
There was one good move in the second half. I can't remember if you remember it, Tom. It was around the 60-minute mark, and I can't remember who swung it in from the left. But if Sam Smith had just left it, it would have fallen to Lancaster, who would have been in a great opportunity to get a shot off. But Smith went chasing a header that wasn't really on the table. And I wonder if that was a sign of desperation from a guy who knows he's bang out of form, hasn't scored in weeks and is desperate to do so. But in the same sense, he's been so desperate, he's kind of sort of making it worse. It sort of reeks of desperation, doesn't it? Owen, we've had loads of questions, obviously, about this one, but there's one from Matthew, which I'm going to put to you. He asks, has Bonner hit the panic button too early with changing formation and personnel?
So it was
a new formation on Saturday, wasn't it, with the two holding midfielders and two sort of playing behind a lone striker. We haven't seen that before. It was a different version of a three at the back, which we obviously saw for the first time against Sheffield Wednesday.
I don't know if he has hit the panic button. I think his hand's forced a little bit with the injuries and into the formation he plays. The one thing that gets me is like the players seem to like really rigidly follow what he says or what instructions he's given them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like discipline's good, but I think, you know, you guys spoke about it a few weeks ago with like throw-ins and stuff like that. It's like there are times when you can just take a quick throw-in, just whoever's near the ball, just get it and throw it and just get the ball into a box or something like that. You don't have to wait for George Williams to come up and take it. You know, likewise with free kicks, you don't have to stand over it for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes discussing the thing. There just doesn't seem to be that urgency. That I'm not going to say hunger, because that's, I think that's a bit of a bigger thing. Like, you know, the players want to win. I think that's obvious. But yeah, you know, it's like Bonner's obviously said, like, right, you're on free kicks, you're on throw-ins, and the players just I don't know if they lack that like intelligence, I suppose, to switch it up really quickly, or if they do want to do it, are they in fear of Bonner? You know, like has he got a bit of a John Bex going on? You know, I don't think so. I think that's something that's me speculating. But why, you know, why is this? Why are we not taking fast throws? You know, I think we had a half chance in like the 88th minute yesterday, and that looked to be like the only time when everyone was like, or the first time in the game where everyone's like, you know, shit, we need to get a goal here. And it's like, you know, you're 1-0 down at home to a team that, with respect, aren't particularly good. Why is that urgency only coming on when there's 2 minutes left? You know, with Doug Bonner out for making substitutions late, he didn't in that game. He made them early. Yet those subs, you'd think, like, I'm going to come on with a point to prove. I'm going to come on and I'm going to bag a goal. I'm going to change this game. None of them did. So, you know, it's not like, I don't think Bonner's panicking as such, but I wonder if the players aren't responding to, I mean, maybe this is a bigger conversation because people are saying about him losing the dressing room and stuff like that. I don't believe that for 1 minute. You know, we'll get onto that in a bit, but for some reason, the players are just following him really rigidly, but it's not working. Of course he's got to change it. It's not hitting the panic button, is it? Changing the formation. People have been clamouring for us to try three at the back. You know, we've been shipping goals. We've got, what, the third, fourth worst defence in the division. Yeah, try three at the back. Of course you do. You know, you've got to try and tighten up at the back. We're still conceding. We're not conceding tons anymore, but we are still conceding. Maybe three at the back's worked a little bit, but...
You know, we've moved to scoring for the opposition now, haven't we? So that's how we fix that one. You touched on something there, Owen, which I hummed and hawed about putting into the running order for this week's episode. But yeah, it's the hysteria around Mark Bonner off the back of, I'll say yesterday's result, but people will probably counter that and say it's not just Saturday's result against Port Vale, but it's the last, you know, 7 or 8 results. Decided to put it in because I think it is worth us addressing it as a podcast. First question I want to put to both of you, just how worried are you for the rest of the season? Or are you, like myself, in a position where we are exactly where we sort of expected to be, you know, that sort of bottom 8 to 9 clubs, had a bright start, but we're going to go through sort of bad patches. We did it the season before. Do you feel it's just a bit of that sort of repeating itself from last season, and we've got enough about us to make a fight of it and to still have a good season because there's plenty of games left to play? Or are you a little bit more worried than where you were, say, compared to this time last year when we were just coming off another bad run of results?
This looks worse because it's 5 losses in a row. Mm-hmm. And clearly that's the headline, and that's you know, look, let's also not beat around the bush. It's a very realistic possibility. We're sat here this time next week talking about 7 losses in a row. And then you've got, you know, what looks like a potential banana skin in the FA Cup followed by Bolton at home.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's the first thing. I think in terms of how worried I am, I'm maybe a little more concerned than I was this time last week, because, you know, as we mentioned a couple of times, Port Vale are not a team that we should be losing to at home. You know, they have good quality and they're players that can hurt you, but that is a game that we should be at least taking something from. And obviously, for most people, I think the expectation would be that we're getting 3 points from that game, if that's not getting ahead of ourselves too much. So there's definitely concern there. I'll maybe say two things that I think. I'm not sure whether this is me not being concerned or whether this is just like a bit of reality on the situation that we're in. The first thing is, like, look at the table. Like, we're not even in the bottom four. So like that's like, we're not like rock bottom of the league. We're not like cast astray. Like we're actually above the relegation. We're 4 points above it. And, you know, the teams that are in that bottom four, they're not winning games. So that four points is a much bigger gap than, say, being 4 points clear at the top of the league, because obviously the teams directly below them are winning all their games. The teams below us are pretty much losing all their games, with the exception of one or two who maybe picked up a bit recently. So that's the first thing. And that's just in terms of like the pure facts of the league table. We're not in the bottom four.
Low MK Dons are, though. Love that.
Yeah, I mean, like, who'd have seen that coming? And like, you look at them and, you know, we think we've got problems with the quality and sort of options that we believe we've got in the squad. When you look at them, they brought in like 18 players over the summer. They, you know, got to the playoff semi-final last year and they've fallen apart. So it does prove that teams can go through rough patches, and I'm sure they'll get out of it. I'm sure that we'll turn around, you know, the slump that we're in. I guess the other thing I would say is that, like, I don't think you can, right, you can't understate what an achievement it was last season to never have this conversation, to go through a whole season in League One with the budget we've got, and at no point you're ever actually going, do you know what, we could get relegated here. Mm-hmm. To not have that conversation at all throughout an entire year is a real achievement in itself. And the fact that we're 4 points above the relegation zone and now we're worried, like, again, like, it does kind of speak to how well we're doing, really. When you kind of take a step back and just look at it, we should be in a relegation battle this season. You know, the league table is determined by the salaries that you pay to your squad 99 times out of 100. And ours is in the bottom four. So we should be in a relegation battle. And by right, we should be getting relegated, because we have a budget that dictates that that's where we should be. We've overachieved a hell of a lot in the last couple of years. And this is just, I just think it's a bit of a regression to the mean. You know, you look at the XG table, for example. Obviously, it's a metric that maybe some people buy into more than others, but you know, it has us where we are. Like, we're kind of performing at a level that maybe people think we kind of are at and we should be at. This isn't me saying that I'm not worried about us getting relegated or I'm not worried about us being in a battle. I'm just saying it's not like the catastrophe that I think it's been made out to be. And you know, I think we've kind of skirted around the issue on the pod a couple of times this season, where sort of questionable things have been charted or people have sent, you know, stupid things on Twitter. But there is a group in there are parts of the NRE particularly that routinely now are just like, I think, been quite stupid. Basically, the booing at halftime, like, it's not on. Like, you're drawing a game. It wasn't a good first half performance, but come on, like, you're not even behind at that point. Like, support them. The chanting of the song, I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it was the effect of, you're nothing special, we lose every week. Like Bonner said, like, 3 weeks ago about like an almost identical song, we don't like it. And this is a manager that the same people were really upset because they thought he was going to go to another club a few weeks ago. Like, you have to pick one camp or the other. You're either with the club, you're either supporting them, or you're not, and you're just there to, I don't know. And the other thing is, like, yesterday in the NRE, like, we were stood in the aisleway, or near the aisleway, I should say, because obviously the stewards mean that you can't stand in the aisleway anymore. But like, it's like the 75th minute, and people are like streaming out. Like, you're the ones that are supposed to be supporting the club. Like, you're the ones who are making all the noise on Twitter about, you know, being the guys who support the team and get behind the team and sing the songs and stuff like that. And, you know, if there's people that are listening to this that maybe take an issue with what I'm saying, maybe you're part of the problem. But, you know, anyway, this is turned into a bit of a gripe from my side rather than directly answer what the question is. But I guess it all kind of comes to the effect of, like, yeah, it's been bad recently, but it's October and we aren't even in the relegation zone. So chill, we'll get better. It will turn round. It's a tough moment that we're in at the moment. Things like injuries, poor form, mistakes, losses, playing good opposition. And it's just gone basically as bad as it possibly could. And I get that. I get that it doesn't look good. And does it feel good when you're losing games week after week, which is what it feels like at the moment. But there's plenty of the season left to turn it around. There's a January transfer window where we can freshen up the squad again. And before that, like, you've just got to hope and think that there's enough quality in the squad to get some light back into it, basically.
Mate, it sounds to me like Tom Walker to the Habin in the January transfer window. Done deal. Absolute done deal.
Main stand, you get
the main stand. There you go. You've got options, Tom. You've got options.
Everyone leaves at 70 minutes here as well. So, yeah.
Look, let's keep these last two questions really quick, because obviously we've got a double game week to preview. Just really quickly, what is the panel's take on number one, Bonner losing the dressing room, and number two, the small group of people that are calling for Bonner out? Very quick responses from you both.
Bollocks. He's not lost the dressing room. No chance.
Where's that come from? Like, I don't understand what it is. Like, I guess we're maybe contributing to it by even discussing it, but, like, the term, like, lost the dressing room, it's one of those things that people say when results aren't going very well, never seems to have any real basis. There's no, like, evidence of it. But it does form like a narrative,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite annoying. I think, you know, I don't believe that there's, like, a significant section of our fans. I don't believe there's a real discussion about whether he should or shouldn't remain. If there is, it's utter delusion. It's utter delusion. I mean, it's difficult to even take seriously. Like, it's have your opinions, fine, but, like, you've got to have some, like, common sense about things. Like, yeah, I'm sorry. I can't really go into, like, more. I can't go into more of an answer. I can't analyze it more. I just think, like, if you're at a point where what you're seeing is making you so unhappy that you want to sack probably the second best manager we've ever had, maybe football's not for you. Maybe there's a Premier League team out there you can go and support who do win every week. Maybe you need to go and support a team that are backed by, you know, an oil state or something like that, where there are unlimited funds. You can go out and buy success. You can, just win every week and trophies, all that sort of stuff. And it's all kind of fun and games. Bonner's done an incredible job on what is really limited resources at this level. And it's probably something we maybe don't say enough about how well he's done. The fact that anyone could turn around and think that he's not the right person to lead us through this, makes me think that there's something in the water in Cambridge at the moment, maybe.
We'll end this part by saying, Matthew, you tweeted us this morning, and your words, very wise words, sum up the feelings of the panel, and that is, trust in Bonner to turn this around. You don't just lose the dressing room in a few games after several years of cohesion. Let's move on to the section of the pod that I've liked to title, Things Don't Get Any Easier. I've got some bullet points to back that up. They go like this. Injuries piling up. Taylor went off yesterday, possibly injured. O'Neill looked like he pulled up. Wickham away on Tuesday. That's a team we never beat, in case you've forgotten. Then on the Saturday, we travelled to good pals up the road, Peterborough, a team who have just gone up to fourth themselves and seem to be learning how to win ugly. They've scraped to wins over Oxford and MK Dons recently. And then, yep, like Tom mentioned, our next home game is to a rather well-backed and doing fairly good team called Bolton. So, yeah, but some big, tough games coming up for us. Let's start with Wickham. Tom, normally when we play Wickham, you give us a good old rant about how much you don't like Wickham. I feel like maybe you're a little bit all ranted out, or have you still got a little bit left in the tank to give us some thoughts on Gareth Ainsworth's team?
Yeah, there's plenty in the tank. Don't worry about that. It's going to be needed as well, because this is two real foes of the pod that we've got coming up. Yeah, I mean, Wickham are just a purely detestable football club, aren't they? in so many ways. Maybe we don't have time to go into now, but maybe just go back and listen to the last time we played them. A lot of it, to be fair, comes from the way that we typically perform there. And the way that they just have our number every time we play them. Yeah, I mean, Wickham's a tough game. We know what the record is there. We know that Ainsworth teams play in a certain way, which maybe lends itself to playing against teams who are well out of form. It's right on top of us. It's in our face. It's direct. It's aggressive. At times, it's pretty unpleasant. And I guess you could argue it's kind of the game that you don't want after losing five on the bounce. To caveat that a little bit, they're not the Wickham team of last season, or certainly aren't at this stage, a 12th.
I wanted to say something similar, but they've won the last three on the trot, so I'm wondering if that's going to ruin my bullishness.
Well, it sounds like they're due a loss and we're due a win. So maybe those
love it. Love that.
Something has to give. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it just stays the same and they go four on the bounce and we go six on the bounce. We'll see. I mean, make no mistake, if we come out of these next two games at 1 point, it's probably not a bad return. All things considered, obviously, ideally. And I guess there's still a very, very slim possibility that you come out of October with 6 points and one of those is a win in the derby and suddenly things look a little bit better, a little bit, you know, you can breathe a little bit easier.
That's the hope that kills you, Tom.
Yeah, I was just talking about delusion. maybe it's come back to bite me. I mean, Wickham away is a game that always concerns me, for reasons that are so obvious, but I just like to think that we can go there and do something.
I've thought earlier in the month, and I think I remember saying this either on the pod or two members of the pod in a social setting, I backed us to get us a result away to Wickham. And by result, I mean not losing. So the sensible part of me thinks I should probably come on this week's pod and say, actually, I changed my mind and we're nailed on to lose, especially because we don't know who's going to be even fit to start. But for the sake of a bit of positivity, I'm sticking with it. I back us to do something at Wickham and surprise some people. Owen, going into the game, I guess the answer to this question is it all depends on who is fit enough to play. But would you stick with the back three that we've been seeing over the last couple of games? It felt like sort of a back three that sort of turns into more of a five or seven out of possession kind of suits itself better for big pitches, you know, which obviously Wickham has, and maybe tougher, more physical games, which again, Wickham will be offering. Would you like to see three at the back continue on Tuesday night?
Yeah. I mean, it does okay. It does a job, doesn't it? I think it needs to be a very disciplined three at the back. I think the wingers need to be, the wing backs need to be, it's probably going to end up looking more like five at the back, because I can't imagine we're going to go there and attack a lot. You know, I'm assuming it's going to be Williams and Brophy kind of right and left there, maybe, or Cadena, I don't know, but yeah, probably Williams and Brophy as the kind of wider players. Are they going to be, you know, kind of pinned in supporting the defence? Maybe that's just how we're going to have to do it. We're just going to have to park the bus, essentially. Let's give it a go. I don't think we're going to go and take the game to Wickham, are we? Despite their form and whatever.
Right. Then after that, on Saturday, just a small affair of our first league game at London Road for a mere 20 years. We would have got a fan preview, but then we realised there are no Peterborough fans knocking around, so we had no one to speak to. So instead, we'll just talk to Tom and Owen about our thoughts on the game. Tom, I don't mean this in a condescending way, but this will be your first trip to London Road for a meaningful match. Like, how does it feel? Like, you know, I guess obviously the last few weeks haven't made it any more exciting given the form that we're in, but there must be a part of you that is just relishing the fact that, you know, you've wanted this game and this fixture and this away day for such a long time, and it's finally here.
Yeah, well, George, to answer that question, I'll tell you what I did earlier on today. I sat on a sofa, having had quite the evening out on a Saturday, and sat down to watch Watford against Luton. Luton's first trip to their bitter rivals in a similar length of time, where they went down to a 4-0 loss and ended up with 10 men. And to be honest with you, it just filled me with dread.
I've seen us lose 4-0 at London Road. I don't know if you were at that one, Owen.
It was 4-1, but yeah.
4-1.
Yeah, 4-1.
Scored a goal. We'll take that. It's a big occasion, right? I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the, yet more detestable things that we could talk about them lot up the road, whether it's the people involved, where their success has come from, how they've got that success, and the way they carry themselves as a football club, people they've employed, that sort of stuff. I'm sure we can talk about that in more detail. But I mean, in terms of what it means to us as a club, I think it just shows, like, again, like it's another example of sort of how well we've done to, you know, get here, basically. You think of, there was a couple of years where, you know, they're in the Championship and we were sat like towards the bottom end of the conference. And you think, like, you know, the millions that they've spent, the investment that's gone into that football club over the years, like the development of their infrastructure, and we've come from absolutely nothing, and we now go there as equals. I mean, certainly in terms of league status, maybe not so much in terms of how we're performing at the moment, but it's an occasion that we need a performance to kind of match. I kind of hesitate to just wheel out the old derby cliches, but there's not really anywhere to hide. If Bonner has a sense that any player isn't quite up to it at the moment, they have to miss that game. They can't play. You need people who are fully committed. You need people who are up for it. You need people who are willing to get a bit nasty if it's needed. I think, like, for me, you know, it's going to be my first experience of the derby, which is mental, frankly, having been going for, you know, more than my fair share of years. But I just hope with every fibre of my being that we leave that ground happy on Saturday evening. I'd love to think that we could bounce back with a decent performance of Wick and then go there and win. I think it really blow the cobwebs off, so to speak. I'm sure at points it'll be a pretty unpleasant afternoon. I guess that's just, you know, par for the course when you go to a place like that. But just please win. Please God, win.
I'm clutching at straws by saying this, but they struggled to beat MK Dons, who are obviously bottom. They drew at home to Burton. They lost to Fleetwood at home. So is there something there to suggest that, you know, they're fourth in the table, but is there something there to suggest that, you know, they can be got at, or they're not the sort of, you know, they're not going to steamroll the league. They're maybe not the quality of an Ipswich who seems to beat most people. Sorry, Owen. Or am I just clutching at straws a little bit too much there, Tom?
Well, they can be got at. They're not, they're a good team at this level, as they often are, but they're not, they're not 1990s Brazil. You know, they're a decent team. Of course they are. And, with the amount of investment that's gone into them, like I said, you know, in terms of pure like squads and the players that each club has available to them. And, you know, if you take away the fact that it's Peterborough against Cambridge, I think most people would look at it and consider them as really heavy favourites for the game. You know, it's pretty obvious. And the other thing is that, like, they probably do, as much as I say it's really quite gritted teeth, they probably do come in that bracket of teams that we have typically struggled against. And that's not just this season, that's stretching back since we got into League One. We obviously did form a bit of a habit of bloodying the noses a couple of those teams, particularly towards the end of last season. And, I mean, we're a fucking good place to start this season, to be fair.
Well, we're due one, right? We're absolutely due one. Like, we've we do one of those little old Cambridge upset the odds, upset the bigger team performances. You know, we've not had one yet this season. You know, the Sheffield Wednesday game, the Derby game, the Ipswich game, Portsmouth away. You know, we've had our fair share of sort of defeats. The law of averages suggests that we're due a little old Cambridge performance, and I've got a feeling it's going to happen Saturday.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of stating the bleeding obvious a little bit because he is our manager, but this is Bonner's game. This, like, he's absolutely central to what happens in this game. I know that Grant McCann obviously has a pretty long term association with them, but it's not the same as having a fan in the dugout. Bonner has to spend the days after Wickham basically transferring every bit of hatred that he's got for Peterborough United into that squad and just tell them to go out there and make it a fucking, like, fight and just be up for it. They've got quality all over the pitch. We know they have. And, you know, we have to do what we did really well at times last season, just shithouse it a little bit, make it horrible. If you need to, stick some pretty industrial challenges in early doors. Because we need to level things up. You know, they've got players in that squad who they've spent millions of pounds on themselves, like Clark Harris up front. You know, they've got Edwards at centre back, who, you know, is touted to go on to much bigger things than where he is now for, again, you know, multi-million pound fee. This is the sort of resource that we just don't have access to. So yeah, you know, if it takes Paul Digby to leave one in on someone, then do it. And you know what? Bonner's carried himself really well, and we've been like a really respectful club, and everything that we've done has been done in the right way over the last couple of years. But if the message has to be, you know, take one for the team, early doors, smash into the best player, do it. It's that sort of fixture. And, you know, from the away end, like, it's got to be a real kind of up and at 'em sort of atmosphere in that away end. And it can't be, you know, songs in the pub before the game, and then you get into the ground and it's flat. It's got to be really on top of them, because, you know, they've managed to find 12,000 fans from somewhere that haven't turned up for the last, you know, God knows how long. You know, we've unfortunately not got as many tickets as maybe we might have liked to the game. So the people that are there are going to have to really, really kind of make it, you know, make themselves known. And yeah, for the players, I mean, they've just got to forget what's happened before, and obviously unless we go to Wickham and win 3-0, in which case, very much remember that. but, you know, the last five games, forget them. Leave them at the training ground, get on the bus. It's a completely new game. And yeah, just go there and hurt some people, and please, please God, win.
Owen, how do you rate this cliche? Form goes out the window for a derby. Like it, love it, hate it, reckon it's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it does, doesn't it? I mean, we've not had a proper derby game for years and years and years. But the Ipswich game last year was as close as we got. And Form went out the window. We weren't there. We got 3 points. We shithoused our way to 3 points at Portman Road last year. This is going to be that times 1,000 for the intensity, for the hate, you know, for all the shit we rip out of them on Twitter. There's no hatred between Ipswich and Cambridge fans. They don't care that much about us. We don't care that much about them.
And that's Owen saying it.
That's me. Yeah, it's coming from me. But yeah, but there, you know, there is a long-standing utter hatred between United fans and Borough fans. That, you know, there really is. If you go back to, you know, go back to the 70s and 80s, it was, you know, it was really nasty. Even in the 90s, when we were kind of going, when we were playing them, at, you know, late 90s, it wasn't particularly pleasant. You know, it's going to be a really horrible game. And if we end up losing, if we end up getting a hiding from them, but we end up with eight players left on the pitch, then you know what? I'll take that. Just go there, like Tom says, fucking hurt them. Let them know we're there.
Owen, let's end the pod with some nostalgia. Tom mentioned he's not been to a derby game. Let's cheer him and anyone else up who's listening to this, is looking forward to their first derby. What's your favourite memory from a Cambridge Borough game?
I mean, I'm not as old as people might think. So sadly, I'm not gonna remember the 5-1 there with Dion announcing himself on the world stage with a hat trick. I suspect that will be most people a few years older than me will be their favourite memory. And Imagine if Fajiri becomes our next Dion, you know, goes there, bags a hat trick, we batter them, he becomes a legend, sell him for, let's say, 10 million quid now, because, you know, Trevor
inflation
all that. yeah, imagine that. No, my personal favourite memory is, I mean, I started going in the mid-90s, and I think I've only seen us beaten once, which was at Michael Kidd goal in 98, which was fantastic at the Abbey. Like you said, we lost pretty heavily there at London Road in 2001, Tom Young scored. But I think it was the 0-0 at home in I'm going to say 2001, late 2001. And Mark Joseph scoring in front of the Newmarket Road end. Mark Joseph, who was part of Roy McFarlane's team, pretty integral part of the 98-99 promotion from Division Three at the time, went to Peterborough. They I don't think they bought him off us, but I think he went on a free when his contract expired. Never scored for United, quite famously, and yeah, knocked one in at the Newmarket Road end, gave it the absolute big un, but couldn't see the linesman with his flag up behind him. Everyone in the NRE could. Yeah, brilliant. Take that, Judas.
I was in the NRE that day. I remember that moment. It was beautiful. That was going to be my pick, but I've got another one. The man himself, Paul Wanless, even relayed us with this this tale when we did his Hall of Fame podcast, which is available as are all of our previous podcasts on Spotify or wherever else you get your podcasts. But yeah, he scored, I believe it was in a draw at home to Borough. And he sort of slid in to sort of make connection with the ball and it went in. But what he didn't realise until he stood up was that his shorts had kind of come down as part of the movement that saw him score. And he stood up and didn't realise, but was basically flashing his ass to the Borough fans. So, yeah, that's my favourite Borough memory. And let's hope that on Saturday we make some more beautiful memories. Owen, thank you very much for your time this week.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, enjoyed it. Good to be back.
Good to have you on, buddy. Tom, always a pleasure to see you, mate.
Yeah, it is indeed. Yeah, I hope to God we're sat here happier next week.
Tom, we've gone the whole podcast without properly talking about the FSA nomination.
Yeah, obviously alluded to it a bit earlier.
Do you think it would help or hinder our chances of winning if they realised that you didn't see Joe Ironside score for Cambridge against Newcastle?
Not got that one in for a while.
Sympathy boat.
We'll leave that in, shall we? Good night, everyone.